Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left at Cafe Lombardi Restaurant in Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Did you get a little stuck there, Marky?
Yeah.
I want to talk today about something that we talked about recently. I want to further a topic that we talked about on a recent show with Andrea Strong from thestrongbuzz.com. We talked with her about going to a place that we still have planned to go to, Daisy May's, which is a barbecue place in Manhattan, where you can get a whole hog. I love that idea. And one of the things that we discussed on the show was she said some of her friends didn't want to go to this whole hog. I mean, you go with 8 or 10 people and you order a day in advance or 2 days in advance a whole hog.
And you have to garb up in order to...
Right. And it's not a whole hog, actually. It's a suckling pig. Smaller. Mm-hmm. Same concept. But the idea is the suckling pig is the whole animal is done, and it's brought out still looking very much like an animal, you know, with the ears and the face and the tail and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Which we did, by the way, for Big Night. When we showed the movie Big Night, we roasted a whole suckling pig.
From the rooter to the tutor, as a famous barbecue person once said on this show. And one of the things that she said was some of her friends didn't want to go because they didn't want to see it. They didn't want to look their dinner in the face. Mm-hmm. And what she said, and we agreed with, was that it's disrespectful somehow. It's a more respectful way of eating to know that the pork chop you're eating actually came from a pig.
It's an animal.
The lamb chop you're eating came from an animal.
It was an animal.
And to treat it with respect and look at it. And if you're not going to be a vegetarian, then you know, look at it, what it is that you're eating. And it is normal and natural and good, and you're a part of nature, you know? Well, I saw it. There was a piece in The New Yorker about the fact that, you know, we don't have that in our culture as much. But I think more and more as we get back to buying locally, you're seeing a segment of the population more willing to do that. And therefore you have these barbecue places where people are willing to look at whole animals. But you're having chefs more and more buying whole animals.
Do you remember back in the day when you walked through Chinatown as a kid, there'd be ducks hanging in the window, you know? And most Americans went, ooh, there's a duck hanging in the window, and went in and ordered duck.
Right. Or went into the supermarket and like you thought that a chicken breast came from a styrofoam container. Well, it seems as though in New York City there is a rise in live markets for poultry. And that's largely due to the immigrant population. But I thought it was very, very interesting. Here, this is a Dateline New York Times. A worker at Kikariki, I pronounced that wrong, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident you pronounced that wrong.
A live poultry market on Linden Street takes two guinea hens from one of the cages that line an otherwise bare room, ties them by their feet up to a hanging scale. Abu Cobb holds a chicken prior to weighing it at the Al Noor Poultry Shop in Greenwood Heights. Those are the that's a subject line of a photo. Speckled birds squawk as their feathers fly onto the worker's rubber apron, and the sticky floor is strewn with other plumes. Here's a quote. The chickens here taste better than the ones in the supermarket, said Miriam Dutan in Spanish as she waited for the birds to be slaughtered and defeathered. She feels it's safer to feed her children poultry once she saw alive rather than those stamped with a pull date at $1.99 a pound. At $1.99 a pound, the live hens are not much more expensive than supermarket poultry. And you know what else? If you buy a live bird, you're not buying an agribusiness-raised, de-beaked bird that looks... Because if you saw what your Purdue chicken looked like... I don't want to say Purdue. I'll take that back. What your McNugget chicken looked like, or any de-beaked chicken looked like... Let me take back both of those brand references because I'm deathly afraid of being sued. but any normal-raised, agribusiness-raised, de-beaked, antibiotic-laden chicken that grew up over a puddle of, you know... as opposed to going to the market and buying a live chicken, what's really more disgusting?
You know, when we talk about this, especially in the new restaurant, Cafe Lombardi, we talk about it all the time, is what we're looking for. Grandma never had to buy the free-range chicken. That just wasn't a choice for her.
But they're all free-range.
Right, of course they were. She went to the marketplace, and she picked the first chicken that came running past. You know, we like to refer to it as a joke. One of our guests one time referred to it as the slow-range chicken. You know, the slowest chicken in the coop is the one that you ate. This changed somehow for us, and now it's an anomaly. We look at that person askance who's going to the marketplace, picking their live chicken, having it butchered.
Right, you're low class or disgusting somehow.
What that's a more disgusting way to eat than the way we choose to eat, which is to go to the impersonal supermarket
and get a tortured chicken
and buy and buy 17 thighs in a styrofoam package.
Right. The increase of live poultry markets in New York may be due to the city's large immigrant population, so posits the Times. The Egyptian owner of the Al Noor Poultry Market on 21st Street in Greenwood Heights, Mohammed Al-Den, said his 17-year-old shop caters mostly to Latin Americans, South Asians, and Arabs. And this is interesting. Hispanic customers usually buy chicken. The Bangladeshis and Indians buy rabbits, ducks, goats, and lambs. And Mohammed, who left Bangladesh 25 years ago, recently brought 9 gray chickens totaling 34 pounds. And the customer says, "This will be enough for 1 week at my house," Khan said. His 5-person family often entertains guests by serving traditional curries. Real food.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about. And I think that's great. Well, here's one point that one of the customers says, "Fresh? You can't get any fresher than live." Yes.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Yes.
I think live is as fresh as it gets.
And fresh is what we want with our chicken. Now, beef sometimes can be aged. Now, there's a new beef on the market. Well, it's not new beef on the market, but mm-hmm. Wagyu beef is a breed of cow. And most famously, the first Wagyu that everyone
first
knows
Wagyu
about
comes
from the town of Kobe mm-hmm. in Japan. And so Kobe beef is Wagyu beef from Kobe. It's a special breed of cow. It eats a special diet. In Japan, it's a diet of sake. And when Wagyu beef is raised in the United States, there's beer put in the diet. And in Japan, the cows get massaged. We don't do that here.
Here we just talk nice to them.
Yeah, right, exactly. We let them watch TV. But Wagyu beef from Japan has not been available in years. And mm-hmm. there was a ban recently lifted. Now, it costs about $70 to $80 a pound wholesale.
And by the way, there was a lot of politics involved here. Japan banned American beef because we weren't testing for mad cow. And they were afraid because we weren't testing for that or because, you know, we were doing some practices that were questionable. They didn't bring beef in, so then we retaliated and said, okay, we're not going to bring in the 1,000 pounds of Wagyu that we bring in every year.
Now this stuff, we had it before the ban, uh-huh. and the Japanese Wagyu is a different caliber and also more than twice as expensive as the American
Absolutely.
Wagyu. And this stuff is...
Different texture, different caliber, just a totally, I don't want to say a different animal, but completely different.
If you got a 5-ounce strip loin in a restaurant, it'd be like mm-hmm. $100.
And I also want to tell you, though American Wagyu is very different than the traditional beef you're getting from other breeds of cattle. Very, very different. And equally as different, maybe even more different, is the Japanese Wagyu from the American Wagyu.
They're all different. And most people, if you go to a Japanese restaurant and you get the Wagyu or the Kobe Wagyu, and I don't think there's Kobe available right
Kobe
now.
Kobe is not available. There are actually three towns that three Japanese producers have received permits, and they are Kogashima, Miyazaki, I'm sorry, and Gunma, which yeah. I'm sure I've those.
But it's all being marketed as Wagyu.
Marketed as Wagyu. Yeah, they're not.
And the way that you have this stuff is very small slices. It's almost like a piece of sashimi, you know, mm. that you would eat it and melt in your mouth. It's absolutely remarkable. So if you see Japanese Wagyu beef out there, you know, it's something very special. And if somebody offers you Wagyu beef on a menu, ask them if it's American or Japanese.
Exactly.
Very
different. Ask that question.
Very different. All right, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And today, joining us from Chicago is Todd Stein. He is a fellow restaurateur. He's the executive chef at MK in Chicago. And he's here to talk with us today about the fact that the Chicago City Council has banned foie gras. Now, foie gras, for those of you who don't know, we've talked about this occasionally, but it's actually against the law in Chicago to serve foie gras, which is the fattened liver of a duck. And so, Todd Stein, this food that's legal everywhere else in America, he can't serve it at his restaurant. Hi, Todd.
Good morning.
Hi, Todd. Welcome to the show. I have a question that I've just been dying to ask you. If they find a little bit of foie gras in your ashtray, can you get in trouble for that?
Well, you know, you can't smoke in restaurants here either. That would be a double whammy. You know, it's funny because the law is written, from what I've seen, it's kind of a little vague. It ultimately says that we can't sell it. So, you know, I think there's a gray line, you know, there, and I think most people are going to comply when it comes into effect that I'm aware of. But it's a very gray line, and the thing that's so crazy about it is I can serve the legs, I can serve the breast from the same duck, but I can't serve the liver.
You have to throw out the liver.
From exactly the same duck, and I think that's a beautiful point.
So hold on a second. But let's look at this. You know about food production, and so do we. You can take a chicken, cut off its beak, take its feathers off, stick it in a cage, leave it there its whole life, never touched by human hands, have it live in a cage over other chickens and a reservoir of chicken feces, and serve a McNugget from that chicken. But
right.
You can't serve a liver from a duck that lives in a pen, in a farm, outside, 9 ducks to a pen, that you hand-feed corn to.
And that you're going to eat its leg, its thigh,
its
breast.
It's still dying.
Its neck you've put into the soup bone, but you have to throw its liver away now.
Which is ridiculous. And you know what? These ducks live, you know, as good, if not better, than we do. I mean, when was the last time you got hand-fed? Right?
Oh, okay, and my liver's enlarged. Okay, I'm sure of it.
But that's some alcohol.
So let's. I just want to talk about what's going on in Chicago for a second, yeah. just to start off. Okay. You banned cell phones while driving. Okay, that's probably not such a bad law, not such a bad thing. You know, we watch people all the time swerving their cars down the road. Okay, so, you know, city council's doing what they think they need to do in order to get, you know, keep people safer. Then you have smoking in bars is now illegal,
right.
Which is also illegal here in New Jersey just recently.
And that's good too.
And you know, for us, we believe in the free market system, you know.
But it doesn't affect us much either.
But for our particular restaurant, which was almost completely non-smoking anyway, and our second restaurant was completely non-smoking, not a huge deal for us, though we do like the idea of freedom of choice. Now you've banned foie gras, and now you're talking about banning trans fats in your restaurants.
The city council which
we'll talk about later.
Chicago is.
What are you guys losing your minds? What's going on out there?
You know, I'm waiting for peanut butter and jelly for children to be banned next.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we're going to legislate that your children need to be in bed by 9 o'clock.
And you must must play show tunes in the bar.
You know,
wholesome.
I mean,
goodness.
Ultimately, and what you said is perfect. You're taking away people's choice and the right to choose. Ultimately, and I think that's. You know, what is such a poor choice? You know, I can understand cigarettes a little bit. You know, there is the opportunity if you're smoking that I might be able to get, you know, sick from it.
Right, but
if
you don't squirt
liver, you're not getting sick.
Right, you don't squirt the fat from your liver onto somebody, from your foie gras onto somebody else, unless you're a very sloppy eater and people would leave anyway.
So I want to give you, a great idea. I know this ban's set to take effect very soon for you guys.
Yeah.
Francis and I, what we did when the smoking ban took effect in New Jersey. We had a giant smoker the night before. So you need to have a foie gras festival the night before where you can use, you know, where you just do course after course of foie gras and overindulge.
Hey, what do you think?
That'll hold you over for a couple of months.
What we're currently doing, we actually closed for summer holiday, and then when we reopened, my tasting menu, every course with the exception of dessert, has foie gras in it.
You don't know Francis very well, or you would have put foie gras on the dessert,
yeah.
Too.
And, you know, the title of the tasting menu is Foie Gras Farewell to Our Good Friend.
Nice.
It's selling like you wouldn't believe to start with.
How are people in Chicago, how are the diners reacting to this law?
The same way we are. They think it's ridiculous and they think it's stupid. And we have people that, you know, that are going, what am I going to do? How am I going to have foie gras? And obviously they can go to the suburbs now when it goes into effect. But people think, you know, just like everybody else, just like our mayor, think it's ridiculous. You know, the guy that Alderman Moore, who put this into city council, claims to have probably never eaten foie gras and has never been to a foie gras farm firsthand. So the information he has is, you know, second and third.
How does he respond to when farmers and people like restaurateurs say, you know, McDonald's chicken farms are much crueler than foie gras duck farms? Is there a response?
Silent. You know, there's no answer or no comment. I think that he first said this is only going to affect a handful of restaurants. Well, I can name you more than five handfuls that it's affecting.
And well, we'll be back shortly talking more with Todd Stein, who's executive chef of MK in Chicago, about the foie gras ban that's taking place in the city of Chicago, where it will be illegal, the first place in the country where it will be illegal to sell foie gras, which is just a form of duck liver. Stupid, stupid law. Back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see, you need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're talking halfway across the country today with Todd Stein, who's the executive chef at MK in Chicago, and we're talking about the Chicago City Council's move to ban, just in that city, the serving of foie gras, which is the fattened liver of a duck.
So, Todd, I got to tell you about something we did here in Jersey way back when. We had what was called the runny egg law here in New Jersey. And it was against the law to serve runny eggs. And do you know how that law was defeated?
Serving a lot of runny eggs.
The governor went to a restaurant and said, this is the most ridiculous law ever.
The day it took effect, the governor invited the press corps to a diner where he ordered runny eggs.
And he said, I'm going to order runny eggs whenever I want, and you're not going to stop me. I'm the governor. Quit it.
And you know what?
I love it.
Florio wasn't a very popular governor. He was popular with me for a number of reasons, but that was the defining moment of his governorship.
So what you need is you need Mayor Daley to go out and order foie gras everywhere he goes. As a matter of fact, when I come to Chicago, I'm gonna come to your restaurant, and you can charge me $520 for my foie gras.
Yeah, the three whole livers.
No, hold on a second. Now the fine, right? If you serve foie gras in a restaurant, it's $500, right?
Up to $500.
So why don't you put foie gras on the menu for $520? I bet you get some takers.
But here's the thing about it too. It's not like if you came in and ordered foie gras and they nailed me, then I'd get a ticket, and then 5 minutes later somebody else. It's per day. So let's say we were to serve it.
Yeah.
It's per day, so I could continue to serve it if we were policed.
So you could have a foie gras. You could once a week, once a month, have a foie gras night and just pay your $500 fine.
If you're fined, I guess. And the thing that nobody knows is how are they going to police this? Is it going to be policed? Is it, you know, what truly is going to happen? And there's a lot of, you know, what's going to go on kind of thing among chefs. What's really going to happen? And nobody's, you know, really sure. I can't imagine that with all the restaurants in the city of Chicago, they're going to have the duck police going around.
Well, I understand that since the city council has been so good at solving crime and poverty and urban housing and all the other problems they've historically had in Chicago, that you know, there'll be plenty of police
resources. Your murder rate's only 2.8 times higher than the rest of the country.
Yeah, so you know, there's plenty of time for the police. Should be going around enforcing the foie gras laws. All right, we'll be back in a moment talking with Todd Stein, and I want to talk with Todd about what's going on in Chicago about people who are running private businesses and the government getting involved in just this mamby-pamby feel-good, and that's coming from, you know, a guy on the left, sort of intrusion into crazy nonsense. Okay, back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Scott. Together we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
We're talking today with a fellow restaurant professional. Todd Stein is the executive chef at MK in Chicago. He's here talking with us about the foie gras ban that's going into effect in Chicago. Now, talk to me, because I can't even imagine if the government came in and said, you know what, red meat, we're not so happy with that. No restaurants in New Jersey can sell red meat. Or worse, no restaurants in New Brunswick can sell red meat. So all the restaurants just outside New Brunswick, they can go to and get red meat. How is the restaurant community reacting to this? Do you think there's any chance this could be overturned? What's the political climate like out there among business owners?
There is talk of a group of people trying to get it overturned and seeing how unconstitutional the law really is.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's really wacky about the whole thing is, you know, they passed it and it's 30 days later. And then, you know, in California it was 12 years later, and rushed into something so quickly, you know, is ridiculous. And I, you know, my whole thought is I'm going to get in my car one day, I'm going to talk on my cell phone while smoking a cigarette, even though I don't smoke, and I'm going to eat foie gras, and I'm going to get nailed on all three at once.
Yeah, you know what you should do? You should smoke foie gras while you're driving.
You should do it naked. No, I mean, is there any resonance for – does anybody in Chicago care about free market? Does anybody – I mean,
this passed
what, 48-1 or something on the city council?
And there's, you know, a lot of people – in talking, obviously this is a big deal right now, and a lot of people are writing articles, and I'm talking to a lot of reporters, and people are, you know, a lot of aldermen, from what I understand, kind of just went, okay, yeah, and a lot of people didn't think it was actually going to pass, and so a lot of people, from what I understand, a number of aldermen wish they would have changed their vote and really didn't know what they were getting into, and I think there was a lot of misinformation when it was brought to city council,
mm-hmm.
and the fact. You know, it's such a small little market. It's not like the beef industry or the fish industry or any of these big things. And these, you know, the two farms, Hudson Valley and
right.
people in Sonoma, they can't fight it. They don't
right.
have the money or the wherewithal to fight it.
And there's one in Canada, and that's it. There's three farms
right.
in
well,
North
I'm
America.
Well, I'm just saying what's here.
That's what I'm saying. Three farms in North America, so
right.
who's going to fight you? I think also people have this vision of foie gras production from the 20s and 30s and 40s, and they don't
right.
recognize that foie gras production doesn't happen like that anymore,
right.
and certainly
I mean,
not on the three farms that we're talking about.
If you saw Bourdain's piece on the travel show where he's in Quebec and him and Martin Picard are going to this foie gras farm, and the ducks are running to the feeders, and
mm-hmm.
you know the ducks don't have a gag reflex from what we understand. Obviously,
right.
I've never been able to talk to a duck, but you know, and so they who wouldn't want to be fed that way.
They wouldn't run to
restaurateurs.
If they hated it, they wouldn't run to the feeders when the feeders call them. I mean, it just wouldn't happen.
You know,
right.
let's talk honestly, Todd, about this isn't going to break your restaurant. I mean, and I think that that's not what we're upset about. That's not what people in the business are upset about. Am I right on that?
No, I agree. It's not going to break, or you know, even selling it isn't going to make a restaurant. It people are upset about the right to choose, and you know, foie gras is not something you replace. You don't go, okay, I'll just serve chicken livers. It doesn't work that way. But it's a luxury item that's been around forever that goes back to you know Roman times,
mm-hmm.
and it in French cooking, it's one of those historical things, and it's a mark of something that's almost upper class and that people crave. And, you know, we've had foie gras on our menu for 8 years. We're going on our eighth year of being open. And people demand it.
Now,
they want it.
You know, I tell you, my objection to it, even if there was very little demand for it, is, you know, if you want to ban the sale of something because it's endangered, which, by the way, you can still buy Chilean sea bass in
right.
Chicago. You can still buy things that are
swordfish is a species in trouble.
Right. You can
buy
endangered species.
No problem.
But and ducks are not
mm-hmm.
and ducks are not endangered.
Right. You can buy Russian caviar. Just.
But my problem is that it's a government on high coming in and not making a judgment, saying you know what, looking at it reasonably and saying. Okay, of all the animals that are consumed in restaurants in Chicago, what is the cruelest treated of those animals? Well, foie gras is like way down on the list.
Right.
But it's a class assumption, and it says, you know what, we're going to get you richy rich guys, because it's a very small segment of the population, and it's a way for politicians, cowardly, misinformed politicians, to look like they do something, to look like they care about the environment. But I'll tell you something.
Sure, but they're not taking on Tyson. That's not happening.
Right,
they're not
right.
taking it.
And they're not,
no way.
And they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything about inhumane methods of animal husbandry. They're not doing anything about.
Take on Hormel. Let's see what
yeah.
what happens.
Money involved on that side of it.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. You know, you can't stop the chicken industry. You can't stop the beef industry. You just can't.
Well, and not only that. I mean, look at restaurants. I mean, if you look at restaurants across the country, there's a great divide in large swaths of the country. Most restaurants now are casual service or quick service chain-owned restaurants. Well, they don't serve foie gras either. Who serves foie gras? Independent restaurateurs. And because we're not big corporations, because Todd at MK is not a big corporation, and Mark and Francis with our restaurant empire here of two restaurants in New Jersey, you know, we're easy pickings. And you know what? The aldermen in Chicago, the ones who didn't pay attention, fine. But the ones who are behind this, cowardly people. You got a problem with inhumane methods of animal husbandry? You got a problem with the environment? Do something real about it.
Right. I got a problem with all those things. I got a problem with it, with every single thing you just mentioned. I just don't see that Chicago's doing anything about it right now.
Right. And, you know, I mean, as chefs, we are always searching out for good products. We are always making sure that we're getting the best quality product. And chefs more and more these days know more about where things are produced. You know, I can tell you about my lamb farmer in Pennsylvania, and I know it. And it's not like we're serving, trying to deceive a guest and serve something that's not, you know, well taken care of and not, you know, well made for them. You know, we're not this big chain restaurant. We're these little guys that are committed to excellence and serving great product.
You know,
it's sad.
I want to actually go in a slightly different direction now, because there's another thing that's come up in your city council. Alderman Ed Burke has brought in the trans, fighting against trans fats. I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that this doesn't pass for exactly the reasons we're talking about.
It's interesting because it first came out and it was for every restaurant in the city of Chicago. And tell me how many consumers know what trans fats are anyways as a whole, but it was for every restaurant. Then it was, well, it's only restaurants that do certain amount of volume, dollar volume a year, and it works out to being places like Cheesecake Factory and Taco Bell and large chains. It's not going to apply to the small guy like me.
Do you really think it's going to pass
with
McDonald's and Taco Bell and Cheesecake Factory battling against it?
I don't think it will pass. I think, you know, it's great to bring up these things for awareness for people and say, hey, let's talk about this. You know, trans fats are a really big thing in Canada right now, and products are labeled zero trans fat. And I understand we want our people to be healthier here. I'm all with it. But let's do it in an educational process, not a we're standing over you or a very political way of this is what we're deciding for everybody.
I'm going to tell you that I think that trans fats should be labeled. I think that we put trans, so many of our products are riddled with trans fats unnecessarily, and frankly, I think it's a fairly easy problem to solve. But so many of our products are riddled with trans fats unnecessarily. I do believe that people have a right to know that there's trans fats in a lot of these products. But at the same time, do you realize how hard it is to get me on the same side as McDonald's?
Yeah.
It's possible, right? Yeah.
You know, how hard do you – what kind of a nut job do you have to be to get me to line up on the same side as McDonald's?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, we have a guy here that owns a hot dog stand called Hot Dogs, and it's the best hot dogs you'll ever eat in the city. But on fries and Saturday, he cooks French fries in duck fat.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
The greatest thing you'll ever eat. You're going to take that
great.
Away?
That's nice. I like that. French fries and duck fat.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And you know, he was in France. He saw it done in France. He figured, I'm going to do this here. And you know what? People go crazy for it.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Todd Stein, executive chef of MK in Chicago.
And I want to talk about hot dogs and duck fat.
And we're going to talk about happier things. We're going to talk about the food scene in Chicago, where Mark and I are going to go out and go to a Cubs game and go to a couple of restaurants, probably MK real soon. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Todd Stein. He is the executive chef at MK in Chicago, and we've been talking about the foie gras ban in Chicago, but we're going to turn the topic just a little bit to talk about Chicago in general. Chicago's become a real food town, man, and MK's got a great reputation in that great city. We've had Charlie Trotter on the show. Who else have we had on the show from Chicago?
Rich Tremonto.
We had Rich Tremonto on the show, and now we've got you. What's going on in the food scene in Chicago? What's made it come to the fore in the last 20 years?
Chicago's always been a great restaurant town. Obviously, I think it's always, for a long time, been second to New York, and it's hard to beat New York just because of population and amount of restaurants alone. But we got a group of really great chefs and a lot of young chefs, and I'm 35, so I would put myself in that category as well. And we have a really wide variety. You know, we have people like Paul Kahn at Blackbird who cook great American food, and I would think that, you know, I'm in that category of great American food. And now we have these three young chefs that are cooking chemical or science food, and they're getting a lot of press, and it's bringing a lot of attention to Chicago in general. And, you know, what Grant Achatz is doing at Alinea, you know, is above and beyond what anybody else in this country does, and it's really unique to see. And I think because there's a group of different thinking people mixed with a group of classically trained, well-taught chefs, you got good stuff.
So tell us a little bit about that, because Chicago is one of the hubs of that kind of scientific food thing that's going on in this country and around the world.
You've heard us call it avant-garde cuisine.
Avant-garde cuisine, yes. Exactly. Tell us a little bit about that scene in your town and how do the traditionalists feel about it in your town?
I think you got a mixed view, and I'll speak for myself first. I think it's great that these guys think this way. It's not my style of cooking. It's not what I like to eat on a regular basis. I've been to, I've been to Alinea. I've been to Avenue. First and foremost, these guys know how to cook first. I don't think it's a flash in the pan. These guys really know how to cook. Grant Achatz is an amazingly trained chef. I think it's very cool. I think you have a lot of traditional people that go, it's not cooking. You know, I'm going and spending $220 a person for food. I want foie gras, lobster, and truffles. Well, not foie gras much longer, but they want those luxury items and they're not getting them, and they're getting, paper that you can eat and things hanging from pieces of metal, and for some people it's not their thing, but I think it's great that chefs think this way and do think outside of the box. On the flip side, sometimes, you know, it's Chicago, it's a meat and potatoes town. People want to eat a 16-ounce New York strip grilled, you know?
You know, it's funny, this whole avant-garde cuisine, I mean, our listeners have probably heard us talk about it before. I mean, we talk about the founder of this movement being Ferran Adrià in Spain, and these kind of unusual, kind of total reinterpretations of food. And I'll tell you that a few talented people in the United States are pursuing. Around here, Wiley DeFrance, WD50. I think that food is interesting, and I'm always interested by it, but I have to say that very often I have dinner, and it costs a lot of money, and I'm very interested to see someone be able to take mayonnaise and fry it, or be able to, you know, turn things into textures that you would never expect. You know, to have a paper that has the picture of popcorn printed on it that you can eat the paper and it tastes like popcorn.
Right.
And while, as a professional who knows food, I respect that a great deal, but I often
I respect the skill that it takes to do something like that.
But I often think at the end of the day, well, that was really cool. Why do I want to eat that?
Right.
I mean, do you find that...
Once or twice.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to eat real food.
You know, that's exactly it. It's like, I want to see it because it's interesting, but it doesn't play the same role in my psyche. I don't think it plays the same role in the community.
It's not satisfying. It doesn't have the same satisfaction level to me as going to a restaurant where I get food that makes me feel good.
And it's communal. I think it's less communal. Would you agree with that?
I agree 100%. You know, I was thinking about this exactly yesterday. We buy this prosciutto that's made here in Iowa, and I would compare it to being better than most Italian prosciutto. And I'm standing on the Garmager station last night talking with one of my cooks, and we slice it to order, so it's sitting out. And I'm slicing, you know, I slice myself a few slices, and the fat is just oozing, and it tastes great. And it's, you know, I have it on my fingers, and I'm like, you can't beat this. You put this into a powder form, it's not the same.
Yeah, you know, it was a dish that I respected. And for those of you who don't know exactly what we're talking about, I'll give you an example of a dish. And it was a good dish. It was really interesting. We had, was it foie gras? Oh, you weren't there. I went with the chef, went to Wiley's place, WD-50. I had many great meals there. But it was, I think it was duck
I've
fat.
I've had many interesting meals there. I don't want to say I've had many great meals there.
It was duck fat that had been turned into a powder.
Mm-hmm.
And then put as part of the garnish on this dish, I believe it was foie, and you would put the duck, you take the powdered duck fat, which is very interesting to get it that way, and you'd put it back in your mouth, and it would turn back into fat. And I thought, well, that seems like an awful lot of trouble to go to. They could have just left it as fat to begin with.
Exactly, and you would have enjoyed it just as much, if
more. More, I think. I don't know. Well, Dominic,
Todd, fart. I got
it. Take a spoonful of malt powder from Carnation and put it in your mouth, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Todd, I got to tell you, when we do come out to Chicago, and Francis and I have been planning on this trip for almost 6 months now, when we do come out to Chicago, I want to come out to your place, and I want you to put a $500 surcharge on our check, and I want you to serve us a foie gras tasting menu from start to finish, and we'll come out there with six or eight people. And
he's not kidding.
I'm not kidding at all.
I'm with you.
And I want you. And we'll tell the whole world that we're coming in to eat foie gras and give you a ticket if they want to.
You know what?
I'm in.
And you know we'll record it. I love this idea. Okay, everybody stay tuned. We have to leave it there, Todd. It's been great to have you on the show. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to talk with us.
Todd, thanks so much. Good talking to you.
Enjoy the foie gras while you can. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left at the Captain Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick.
You know, one of the things, and I love talking to people from other parts of the country for exactly this reason. We just had Todd Stein on from Chicago. And what did Todd bring up? You know, Todd's talking about what's local and what's important in his market. He's talking about a prosciutto that they make in Iowa. To me, that's so interesting and so fascinating because New Jersey has all of the products that are indigenous to this area, and we get to eat those products all the time, and we get to feature them on our menus. But when Francis and I travel, we get to try all these different indigenous products to those areas. And that's part of the fun of traveling is I don't want to have exactly the same food in Chicago as I have in New York City. I don't want to have exactly the same food in Houston as I do in Chicago and vice versa.
I have a vacation planned shortly, and I'm going to go to Ireland and visit some family.
And you want the food to be exactly like it is in New Jersey, right?
Actually, I'd probably prefer the... But then I'm going to Austria. And the food in Ireland is great. My family, we have cookouts and stuff. And I'm really going to spend a couple of days there visiting family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm going to Austria, where we've had a guest on the show, Peter Schleimer, who writes for Vinaria, which is the Austrian food and wine publication, mostly wine publication, Vinaria. And he's been reviewing restaurants and writing about wine for them for years. He's been promoted. He's editor-in-chief now of Vinaria and Vinaria Gastronomique.
I guess they haven't seen him drink.
He is a, what are you talking about? he is a good friend and a motorcycle enthusiast as well as a wine professional and restaurant reviewer. So check out this vacation I got planned. Gonna go and visit with him. I'm renting a hot Austrian motorcycle. Peter and I are taking off on the Autobahn out of Vienna, and he lives in a little town called Mödling, and we're just gonna go around Austria. And every day we'll go to a different restaurant to review, get back on the bikes and ride for another couple hundred miles and then go to a different restaurant. Crash near whatever restaurant. Well,
no, don't say crash. Drinking, motorcycling,
sleep,
crashing.
Sleep
don't,
wherever we, our final stop is. But one of the things he says to me about when we're putting this together, he's like, I'm going to take you to 5 restaurants in 5 days. And we won't run into any of your American friends at any of them. In other words, he's taking me to places
to
that are specifically
deal.
Of not only just of Austria, but of the different regions of Austria. And I just can't wait. It's going to be great. So we'll report on that. Maybe I'll take a recorder with me and report on that when I get back.
You're not going to stop talking.
Maybe. And we'll have some stuff in German. We'll have to translate it. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.